So we're doing a new series starting today, and over this kind of term between now and Easter, we're going to be doing three different series. The main thing I want to talk about is what is the mission that we are on? What is the mission of God? But before we talk about what we're doing, I want to talk about who we're being. Because sometimes as followers of Jesus, we get so caught up in doing stuff, we forget about who we are as people and who we are becoming. So we're going to spend about 4 weeks just looking at how are we becoming who God has called us to be. So we're calling the series Becoming You. So what I want you to do right at the start is to turn to the person next to you and take it in turns, just about 30 seconds each, ask them, who are you? And if you're not used to that question, it's a question that gets reverberated and sung right across football terraces, right across the country, of who are you? Who are you? So you can do it like that, or you just say, who are you? So let them know who you are. You've got about a minute or so, 2 minutes. Who are you? Ooh. Sounds like it's naturally coming out. One of you has sort of given up on talking about yourself, or you've run out of things to say about yourself. I don't know about how many of us this morning have looked into one of these. For those of you who don't know, this is a mirror. It comes in quite handy if you want to see what you're looking like, what your appearance is. Some of you could do with looking at that. But most of you looking fantastic this morning. But have you ever looked in a mirror and thought, who am I? And gone on to a whole kind of philosophical, who am I? I've got a beard now, so I can kind of do the whole philosophical, beardy, who am I? Or looked in and thought, oh my goodness, I've got old. And who I'm becoming. I'm not the person who I used to be. How would you describe yourself? Would you describe yourself because of the things that you do? Or would you describe yourself because of who you are really? And we all have a different person that we project to other people. There's a personal side of us that's very, very private that we keep to ourselves. And we only let a very few people in on that. And even that's I don't really want that person to really know the real me. If you're married, then that's a huge step in terms of revealing more and more about who you are yourself to another person. The other thing is, how honest are we when we talk about who we are in public, or maybe even on Facebook or on social media? We like to project a particular image of ourselves. And there was warnings over Christmas time of don't do the whole Facebook lurking and see how amazing other people's Christmases are because you're just going to end up getting depressed. And sometimes you start to look at Facebook and look at other people and you think, okay, this is who I am and I don't measure up to how other people think I should be. Studies show that on average, some of you, most of you, spend between 25 and 30 hours each week online. And much of that is spent on social media. Some of you are like, only 30 hours a week on social media? I can do 50. No problems. We can talk about that. But we are becoming more and more digital citizens. There is the digitization of life. There's this online sort of really crisis, identity crisis going on where we are giving more and more of our private details to complete strangers. So our activity on Facebook, on Twitter, on Amazon, on Instagram, on Google, on Spotify, every email, every phone call, everywhere you go, increasingly more and more is being noted. I don't know how scary. Some of you are like, right, turn everything off. But things are being noted, things are being monitored, things are being tracked, and you have an online identity that marketing companies eagerly track in order to try to sell you stuff that they think you need. And actually, usually they're right, because they've tracked your online identity, and they know what you're interested in, they know what you've shopped for online, they know all these different things, where you even go with your whole sort of GPS tracking stuff. These companies know your thoughts, your likes, your intimate life details. It's amazing how much you can find out about somebody from something like Facebook. And increasingly, companies are going to Facebook feeds to find out who somebody is. And it's no wonder that there's several of you, if not more, that are thinking, you know what, I'm not going to bother with Facebook anymore. And maybe this is the year of thinking I need to just tone down what I do on Facebook, maybe limit it to, I don't know, 10 minutes a day or something, and just go, or just say, do I really need to be on Facebook or whatever that often? See, these companies, they know you and they know what you want. And my question really for you this morning is, who do you want to be? At the beginning of each year, oftentimes we start thinking, okay, we're not quite as happy as who we are, and we want to be something or somebody different. And so maybe we want to be a bit thinner, maybe a bit fatter, maybe we want to be a bit healthier, maybe we want to do less box set watching, or maybe we just want to do more of one thing, healthier, fitter, nicer, less judgmental, whatever it is. But who do you want to be? Have you got plans? Have you got goals or objectives for this year that when you look into the mirror, you're thinking, okay, who am I becoming? What sort of a person am I becoming? There's a really good book, which I'm basing some of this material over the next 4 weeks on. And actually, we did a life group last term on it. And it's called The Me I Want to Be. And in it, the author, John Ortberg, writes this. He says, the most important task of your life is not what you do, but who you become. It's not about what you're doing. It's about who you're becoming, who you are being. What sort of a person are you? So there's a you, there's a particular picture in your mind when you look at a mirror of who you want to be. And hopefully this week, as you're thinking about this talk and you think about next week, every time you look in a mirror, I want that to be like a prompt for you of saying, okay, who am I becoming this year? Who is the me that I'm wanting to become? So I'm going to give you two photos. One is this person here. This is me, aged about 4, living in Scotland, with very, very curly blonde hair, and looking a bit sad. I used to spend my life playing the harmonica to our chickens, and herding my imaginary flock of sheep into the wardrobe each night before I go to sleep. Who knew I'd become a pastor at age 4? I had 3 sisters. One of them would have just been born. My younger sister would have just been born around that time that photo was taken. Scottish people called me Nicky. Looking back, I probably would have thought about putting an A in front of it and being called Anarchy, which would have been much more better. But look at that photo, and then looking at a photo that I took yesterday, it's a little bit scary. There's a difference. So who I was and who I am now, then also who I'm becoming. That's probably a little bit scary being on the big screen as well. But I don't know about you, when you look back, sorry, I'll go to the next one. Are you becoming the person that you wanted to become? And in fact, I'm going to go back, because I don't want to give too much away. So, and also, what about the next 40 years? So that's me age 4, that's me age 44. Some of us might make it to another for the next 40 years, some of us might not. But some of us, next 10 years, the next 20 years. Who are you becoming? Who do you want to be? And for some of us, most of us, that's a question that haunts us. That's a question that makes us think, what have I done with my life? We worked out this week that I've been alive for, so Sophie and I worked this out, I've been alive for 16,000 days, or just over 16,000 days. And you just think, what have I done with my days? And also, who am I becoming? Although companies think they know you, only God really knows who you are and who you were made to be. God made you to be a particular person. You are unique. You are his handiwork. You are his masterpiece. And it's not just about doing good works. For we are God's handiwork. We are God's masterpiece. And right now, at this moment, God is forming you to become the person he's called you to be. And with the talks that you hear on a Sunday morning, you can engage and say, okay, God, what are you saying to me in this talk? You can have a nice sleep, maybe wake up a different person. You could just sort of switch off and go, you know what, I don't really want to hear any of this because I've heard it all before and it doesn't really work for me. Or you could say, okay, who am I becoming? Paul writes in Ephesians 2:10, we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. But it's not just about doing, it's about who we are, that we are a masterpiece. The picture there, there's a guy called Jeremy Mayer, and what Jeremy Mayer does, he finds junk typewriters, and he takes those typewriters and he pulls them all apart, and then he creates life-size sculptures. He doesn't use any glue, doesn't use any extra screws that don't come from typewriters. He just uses the basic ingredients of typewriters and makes sculptures out of them. That's the deluxe model. Each one of those sculptures, he spends something like 1,000 hours on. Just sits on his garage floor and just gets all these bits together, has all these different bins, all the different bits, and he sculpts something. And when Paul writes, we are God's handiwork, the word he uses there for handiwork is the word poema, or poem. You are God's poem. You are a piece of art. You are art. When we think about art, we think about how art is beautiful, that art is valuable, that art is an expression, really, of the inner being of the maker, the artist. So you are beautiful. You are valuable. You're an expression of the very inner being of the divine artist, God himself. Tim Keller writes this. He says, when Jesus gave himself on the cross, he didn't say, I'm going to die just so you know I love you. Didn't just say that. He said, I'm going to die. I'm going to bleed for your splendor. I'm going to recreate you into something beautiful. Something valuable. I will turn you into something splendid, something magnificent. See, Jesus is the artist, you're the art. He's the painter, you're the canvas. He's the sculptor, you're the marble. You might not look like much now, but just wait and see. Because he can see who you are meant to be. You are his masterpiece. And my prayer for us over Christmas time and going into this new year is that all of us would know who it is that God is calling us to be. And we'd step into who we're supposed to be. We wouldn't just sort of shun it. We wouldn't just kind of keep it at a distance. We wouldn't pretend to be who we think others want us to be. But we'd actually be the people that God has called us to be. The great preacher Spurgeon illustrated it slightly differently. And he said, when you look at a painter's palette and you see all these blobs of paint on the palette there, on the board, it doesn't look like much. Unless you're kind of a bit of an abstract artist. It's like, wow, that's amazing. But it's not until the artist gets those dabs of paint and puts it onto a canvas that you get to see the beauty that there is there. Spurgeon wrote, he says, he takes us poor smudges of paint and he makes the blessed pictures of his grace out of us. It is neither the brush nor the paint he uses, but it is the skill of his own hand which does it all. So the redeemed, that's you lot, should shout out like David, I will give thanks to thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. When we were in a life group in Oxford, so we went to Oxford Brookes University, and we went to a life group which met in the upstairs room in sort of summer town of North Oxford of a painter. And every time we went, there would be a different painting on an easel in the corner of the room with like a palette. And this painting by this guy Roger Wagner illustrates, this is Jesus being held in the arms of Simeon. So it's from the early Jesus, the early years, if you've ever seen that movie. What Roger was able to do was take these little dabs of paint and create something beautiful. think about how you're going to use light and shade and colours. I don't know about you, but how are you, who are you becoming? Are you allowing God to make something beautiful out of your life? Or do you pretend to be something that you're not? Who do you pretend to be? Are you honest with yourself about who you are? When you look in the mirror, are you honest with who you are? Or do you pretend to be somebody else? Do you pretend to be somebody else at church, in life group, at home, at work, on Facebook? Or are you honest with who you are? Or who do you think you should be? Are you becoming the person you want to be? Or are you becoming the person that you think other people think you want to be? That there's a should. It's like, you should be more kind. You should be more thin. You should be more whatever. Are you letting other people dictate who you should be? Are you becoming the real you? See, God made you to be you. He's the one who gets to say who you are. But maybe that you're afraid of who God wants you to be. When people ask you, well, how's your spiritual life going? Maybe that fills you with dread and fear. So whenever we have life groups, at the end of each term, we say, how are you growing? How has your spiritual life changed this term? And people go, well, hasn't. Or people just go, oh, I hate that question. And maybe we think, actually, spiritual life, our spiritual formation is all about rules and regulations. It's becoming more of a more religious person. And maybe look at other people and go, well, they know more of the Bible, or they pray more, and we need to be more like them. So what we do is we set the alarm for, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the morning, and go, okay, I'm going to do an hour's prayer. And then we wake up at 5 o'clock feeling rubbish because we're not used to it, because we're not morning people. And we maybe go downstairs because we know that if we stay in bed, it's just going to go back to sleep again. Maybe get up and we're grumpy and we're cranky. And other people know this. They don't want to be with us at 5 o'clock in the morning. And we're wondering whether Jesus actually wants to be with us at 5 o'clock in the morning because of how grumpy we are. And we maybe do it for a week. And then we just find it's too difficult and we sleep in. And then we feel guilty. And then we think, oh, I must try harder. Or maybe one of you, maybe some of you have decided that you're going to read the Bible in a year. And you started good. You've kind of gone into Genesis. And maybe you're halfway through Genesis. Or maybe you even got into Exodus by now. But actually, you know that there's going to be a hard bit in this slog of going through sort of Deuteronomy and Leviticus. And maybe you think, oh, I've missed a week. Or I've missed a day. Shall I just give up? Or do I need more willpower to get through the whole year of reading the Bible? And it becomes like a religious thing. It becomes all about keeping rules. So spiritual formation is not about how early you get up in the morning. It's not about how much Bible you read each day or how often you turn up to church, although we love to see you every Sunday. See, God made you to flourish. You're to flourish. You're to thrive. To flourish is to become the you that God made you to be. God has made you unique. You're not called to be somebody else, somebody different. You're called to be the you that God made you to be. And God's plan is to redeem you, not to replace you. We're not just to be clones of Jesus. We're to be new creations, but actually redeemed and taking on something of the identity of Jesus, but becoming more like us, more the person that God has created us to be. So over this series, we're going to be kind of exploring several areas where we can thrive and flourish. We're going to be looking at today a bit about our spirits, next week about our minds, then about how we use our time, and then our relationships. And so we're talking about our spirits. We flourish when our spirits are rooted in and shaped by the Spirit of God. If you measure your spiritual growth by the amount of time you devote to Bible study and prayer, then you will fall into the trap of the religious Pharisees. And it starts to become legalistic. It starts to become religious. Jesus didn't say, I have come so that you can follow my rules. Jesus said, I've come so that you can have life and life in abundance. And what does it mean to have life? To have life is all about it's all about having this inner power to make something happen. If you put a seed in the ground, then stuff happens. It starts to grow and it becomes fruitful. To be spiritually alive means to receive power from God to have a positive impact on the world, to thrive, to flourish. So when you think about yourself, who are you meant to be? Spiritual formation is really about becoming the you that God has made you to be, the very best version of you. There's a version of you that God has in mind that maybe you've not discovered yet. And the whole thing about this is because we're living now, we're living as kingdom people, but we're living as now and not yet people. We're a contradiction. There's a sense of, yes, we have everything in Christ, and there's a triumphant aspect of that, but there's also a not yet of the kingdom. And so we're contradictions. We're now and not yet people. And so some days, as we're following Jesus, we get it right and we do well. And sometimes, and I know it because it happens so often to me, I say things or I don't do things which I know isn't the best version of me. I'm giving somebody the worst version of me. You know, when I lie, when I say something, when I'm angry, when I'm grumpy, all those different things, I'm giving somebody the worst version of me. So we live in this now and not yet time. And spiritual formation is the process by which your inner self is being shaped. So you know that your outer self is always being shaped by what you eat, by what you do. And your inner self is always being shaped by what you consume inwardly, not just sort of physically, but spiritually. What you watch, who you spend time with, what you do. So what if you assessed your spiritual growth differently? Instead of saying, okay, how often am I praying? How often am I reading my Bible? What if you ask questions like, am I growing less easily discouraged these days? When something happens that's difficult, does it make me really discouraged? Or can I work through that? Can I see God in that? Or another question would be, am I growing less easily irritated these days? Becoming older doesn't mean that you have to become grumpier or more irritable. It doesn't have to be like that. And sometimes your irritation really shows what's going on inside of you. If you've got a glass that's completely full, whenever someone knocks into you, stuff's going to spill out. If you've got rubbish and junk that's filling up inside of you, it's going to spill out when people knock into you. Right at the center of flourishing is the peace of God and the love of God. So if peace is growing in you, you will be less easily discouraged. If love is growing in you, then you will be less easily irritated. Flourishing is not really about success or income or possessions or even attractiveness. It means becoming the person that God had in mind in creating you. Are you becoming that person? Flourishing means moving towards God's best version of you. It's all about you becoming, I'm going to use a word that you're going to really hate. It's becoming you-ier. It's you, but even more so. So it's not just about holier, it's becoming you-ier. So when you look in the mirror, you think, am I becoming me-ier? Or, that's not going to work. But every once in a while, you catch a glimpse of this. Every once in a while, you do something that surprises you. And you go, oh, I did well. I did a good job. You catch a glimpse of the person that you were made to be. It may be that you say something inspirational at a meeting. It may be that in a prayer meeting, you pray something, you think, oh, that really captures something that I was feeling inside. It may be that you successfully negotiate with a 4-year-old. It may be that you successfully negotiate with a 44-year-old. It may be that you successfully coach a teenager who's having hassle with difficult friends. It may be that you express compassion to somebody. Maybe you write a song. Maybe you stand up to a bully. Maybe you freely make a sacrificial gift. Maybe you fix an engine or you do some decorating. It's an amazing job. Maybe it's you finally work out how to forgive somebody. Maybe you say something that you would never normally say. Or maybe you stop yourself from saying something that you would normally say. And as you do those things, you catch a glimpse, just for a moment, of why God made you, of the you that God made you to be. Because really, only God knows your full potential. And he's always guiding you towards the best version of you. So are you becoming the best person that God made you to be? Are you becoming the person God made you to be? Which leads on to the next question. Well, how do we do that? How do we become who God has called us to be? Well, it's not by self-help. It's not by just going over stuff again and again and again and saying, okay, I'm going to do this, 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 and just trying to repeat it. That might help for some of us, but it's not really about that. And it's not simply about having enough willpower. It's not by knowing enough stuff or some sort of secret formula. How you find out who God has made you to be is not about focusing on you. How you find out who God made you to be is by staying connected to God, by having time in his presence. See, our main task is to stay connected to God. When our primary focus is being present with him, everything else seems to fall into place. When my primary focus is myself, everything seems to fall apart. I don't know if you experience that. When I'm focused so much on myself, things seem to fall apart. When I start to focus more on God, it seems like God puts things together. Really, the only way to become the person God made you to be is to live with the Spirit of God flowing through you like a river of living water. Back in the summer, we had the adventure of rafting down this river. And when you're in a river and you get that flow and you're kind of just flowing with that river, sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow, but you're caught up in that river. And yes, you can maybe swim or you can paddle and sort of change direction. But once that river has caught you, you are flowing in that direction. And for some of us, we don't want to get into that river. We choose to opt out of getting into the flow of that river because we're not quite sure how much we trust God. And maybe it looks a bit scary to us. So maybe we paddle, but we don't actually want to go into that river. In John, John was one of the people that wrote one of the Gospels about Jesus. And he records Jesus saying this. He says, "Let anyone who is thirsty come to me," so come to Jesus, "and drink. Whoever believes in me, as Scripture has said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." So there's this sense of this flow of grace coming from God to us. But then that grace flowing out of us to other people. And people start to experience it. When you're becoming the best version of you, it benefits other people. We love it when you're the best version of you. Everyone loves it when you're the best version of you. When you're the version that God wants you to be. But there is this gap between who we are now and this version. So how do we become the people that God has called us to be? When John writes about this, he says, "By this," by what Jesus is saying here, "let anyone who is thirsty come to me and drink. By this he meant the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were later to receive." So every day I ask God, I say, "Lord, would you fill me with your Spirit?" Every Sunday morning, we always talk about being filled with the Holy Spirit. We do it at the end of each talk. We each do it at the end of worship. That when we're waiting, we sang that new song today, "Waiting Here for You." We wait on God to fill us with his presence, to fill us with his Spirit, because we know that when we're filled with his Spirit, we become the people that God has called us to be. Just in bringing this down to land, as God helps you to grow, you change. But we're not all the same. We don't all grow the same. We don't all have to fit into the same models of spiritual formation. God has created you uniquely. You have different gifts, different abilities, different strengths. Some of you are more introverted, like me. Some of you more extroverted, like Vicky. Some of you are more intuitive. If you've ever done like Myers-Briggs, the whole kind of INFP, you can start getting labeled with some of those things, which isn't particularly helpful. But it is quite helpful to go, okay, this is how I learn, this is how I think. Actually, listening to a monologue for half an hour isn't the best way I learn, but this is how we do things. Actually, I learn better in a small group, which is why we do small groups. But your uniqueness is God-designed, and we all grow differently. Something that really helps me is finding a particular pathway that helps me to grow. So some of you know that I do a bit of running. On the 28th, 29th of December, I went out for a run. So that picture I had of me as a four-year-old, the following year we moved, on that year we moved house from Scotland down to a place called Chorley Wood. And this is in the Chess Valley, so between a place called Chorley Wood and Little Chalfont. As I went out for a run early in the morning, just as the sun's coming up, and for me, that's a moment where I can feel something of God's presence. So you would know that sometimes you feel God's presence in different ways. So all of these ways, I can experience something of God, I can be formed spiritually, I can grow, but and that says naturalist, it doesn't say naturist. It was cold, but it wasn't that cold. I could see there's two of you in particular. Some of you are like, hey, naturist, let's go for it. Let's not. So naturalist. Being out in creation is something, I experience something of God's presence in the outdoors. There's another one, ascetics. People who are drawn to disciplines. They love solitude and simplicity. They love prayer and quiet time. And sometimes in church we say, this is how you should be. And we try and fit people into that model. Or maybe you're more of a traditionalist, where you love historical liturgies, you love the sacraments, you love the ritual and the structure. Or maybe you're more of an activist, where you come alive spiritually with a great cause. You find God as you fight for justice. Or maybe you're more of a caregiver, you meet God as you serve others. You love and you find God as you love others. Or maybe you're, this is all from a guy called Gary Thomas. I don't quite like these words, but a sensate. Sounds like a sort of sen, I don't know. What's the sensei, isn't it? It's the Japanese. Yeah. Sensate, senses God through the five senses. Or maybe you're more of an enthusiast, that your love grows through people, you love mystery, you love celebration, you love parties. Maybe you're more of a contemplative, you're drawn to solitary reflection and prayer, which I think is quite similar to the ascetic one. And then more of an intellectual, that your love grows, your love for God grows by learning and intense study of the Bible. That when you're studying the Bible, it's like, I'm experiencing something of God's presence. And I found that really helpful, just in terms of working out, okay, how do I best experience God's presence? And I will do all of those things. But I know that the one thing that really helps me is being outdoors, enjoying God's creation, and finding God in those moments. What I'm going to do is, on our website or somewhere else, maybe on Facebook, but maybe after this talk, maybe not Facebook, put a link to these sort of sacred pathways so people can, there's lots of little tests and things that you can do. It's not quite Myers-Briggs, but it's the whole thing of, okay, how do I best experience God's presence? And then talk to somebody about it. It may be that as I went through that list, you know, you thought, that's me. That's how I experienced something of the flow of God's Spirit. And so today, it may be that you're thinking, I'm standing there and this river is flowing by, and I need to work out, what am I going to do? How am I going to be the person that God's called me to be? Am I just kind of going to sort of dip my toe in a little bit? I get my toe wet. I go, no, I don't really like that. Or are you going to wade in a little bit and just go, okay, I'm just going to feel the flow just around my ankles? Or are you going to wade deeper into more of God's Spirit? Are you going to get to a point where you're even out of your depth in God's presence and let the flow of God's grace and mercy and love carry you to where God is calling you to be? Because really, at the end of the day, it's all about grace. It's all about grace. It's not about becoming the better person of you just by force and by willpower. It's by allowing God's grace to work in you and to spend time in his presence. So I wonder if we could stand together and we're going to pray.